Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk. Here we are on Juneteenth. What? Yeah, Juneteenth. Officially, now it's a national holiday, according to our president. So June 19th. I still think it's just the day before Father's Day. So, but we'll see. Actually, those probably vary from year to year. But at any rate, I want to warn everybody, there could be, we are in the middle of a downpour. And I want to say the radar shows bright red right where I'm at. So at any rate, if we get any interruptions, Derek is poised and ready with his 60 seconds on sports or 3 minutes on sports or whatever it would take to get the power back on. I actually am using a laptop, and but if I lost the modem, I'd have to go to a hotspot. So we'll have to see if that works off my phone. But so all back up in our bunker here to, an undisclosed location in a bunker with a backup power supply. Boy, are we all set, aren't we? Well, let's see. What would be a good thing to do today? And it would be fun to go to a gun show, but there aren't any today. There is one tomorrow only, the Green Acres Sportsman and Collector Show at the Walter F. Bruce VFW Post in St. Clair Shores, Michigan. That's tomorrow. Ohio's got one, though, down at the Westland Mall in Columbus. Missouri's got the Springdale one in Springdale, Arkansas, right at the northwest corner Arkansas Convention Center, and then the RK Gun Show in Kansas City. So New York has none. Actually, you know, New York has like one later in June, none in July, and one in August. And it's like, come on, guys. And then I see they start adding them back in September. So at least hopefully we'll get back to normal as we come up on hunting season and stuff like that. Oh, let's see. We're still sitting here at 751,102 CPLs, and that'll be the number through July. So we've got a couple more weeks until we get the next round of numbers. Let's see. Here's an interesting set of numbers, though. The gun industry programs, so this is gun industry like safety programs and stuff, have resulted in the lowest accidental firearms death total since 1903. You don't hear that when you hear people talking about we have a gun pandemic here in the United States, a gun epidemic, a gun violence epidemic. But in reality, we got the lowest accidental firearms death toll since 1903. 118 years, huh? And that's the lowest since then, even though there's probably hundreds of millions of more guns. That's pretty amazing. And actually, what's interesting is that you would think that nothing is working. Nothing is working to improve our gun safety record and stuff. We're going to talk about that a little bit. But the thing is that the in 2020, December 31st in 2020, is a direct result of efforts spearheaded by the firearms industry, as well as the federal-level bipartisan Fix NICS congressional legislation that was signed into law by Donald Trump in 2018, the Fix NICS legislation. They have actually had a 270% increase in the number of adjudicated mental health records that has been added to the FBI NICS program. So that's where I want to say for a lot of years there was no requirement for states to turn that information over to the Fixed Knicks or to the Knicks program. And that's one of the things that is helpful in if you go and, you know, they always say, oh, we need background checks. Well, we have background checks, okay? Well, you don't have a background check if it's a guy out on 8 Mile in a parking lot selling them out of the trunk of his car. And actually, a universal background check will do nothing to stop that, okay? But the Knicks program and the Form 4473 and things that you guys fill out when you buy a new gun from a dealer, okay, and you have a background check, it comes back and it says you're a prohibited person or you're an approved person, okay? And if you're a prohibited person, one of the ways you get there is by being, a felon, a domestic abuser, or be mentally adjudicated as not being fit to own a firearm, okay? And so that has gone up 270% in the last couple of years. So that's pretty good. And I want to say that was actually something that there were 16 more states that have passed laws increasing the number of prohibited mental health records. So I want to say all of us are, I don't want to be one of these people that sits here and goes, well, there should be no restrictions or something like that. If there is the NIC system and the background check system is working and it's helping to prevent, felons or mentally ill people from getting guns, then that's a good thing, because none of us want people that shouldn't have guns to have guns, okay? So, at any rate, I'm sitting here reading this system, and let's see. In December of 2012, the NICS background check system included only 1.7 million disqualifying adjudicated mental health records. And now, up on by December 31st of 2020, so that was just 6 months ago, it was up to 6.14 million. That's the 270% increase. So that's pretty cool. Also, that it's interesting that the number of NICS systems that have been run since 1998, November of 98, when the system was first put in, is 365 million checks run to date. That's pretty amazing. So don't tell me that we don't have a background check system. That would be easily, well, you know, I've had multiple run on me, because when I buy a gun, now I actually have a CPL, and in Michigan, they used to be able to say that, well, if you have a Michigan CPL, that counts for your federal NICS check. And so they didn't have to call it in. But then, no, Michigan has now made, recreational marijuana legal, which is against the law federally, which, by the way, we'll talk about that in a minute. And so they've now disqualified Michigan as a Michigan CPL as a qualifying check for the NICS check. Interesting. But I wonder if they did a NICS check, and if you did have a marijuana card, I wonder how. I don't know. How does that work? Very interesting. Oh, you never know what path these trails that things will lead you down when you pass these laws just to get votes. I mean, the whole reason, like Gretchen Whitmer and some people are in there, well, actually, because they did not pose a reliable or a decent GOP challenger. But all you got to do as a Democrat is put something like pot on the ballot, and oh, look at that! You're suddenly going to get every doper out there is going to be voting for that, and then you know what that means. That means they're going to get Gretchen Whitmer. So let's see. Project Child Safe is NSSF's, the National Shooting Sports Foundation's campaign to promote safe and secure home storage, teaming up with more than 15,000 local law enforcement agencies. NSF has provided more than 40 million free firearm safety kits, including gun locks and training and stuff like that. So that is a big part of what has helped with reducing the accidental firearm fatalities in the U.S. to the lowest rate since 1903. So that's pretty cool. So these are real solutions that actually work, not just somebody going, well, we need to ban assault weapons because we have a gun problem. Well, actually, I think total number of rifles that were used in crimes was like 3%. And actually, that's all rifles, not just AR-15s. It's usually handguns. But no, they got to vote for wanting to get rid of the scary things. We'll talk about that a little bit, too. Let's see. Why? This is interesting. Why is the Brady gun control operation getting another $579,000 in PPP bailouts? What is that, a PPP bailout? Well, actually, that is the Paycheck Protection Program that was set out for, COVID-19 for businesses to be able to get grants or loans to be able to make their payroll. So they actually had, first of all, last year, the gun control group, the Brady Gun Control Group, got $695,000 in PPP, and now they're getting another $579,000. So they will have a total taxpayer cost of more than $1,274,530. That is your tax dollars going to support the Brady gun control bill. Oh, well, but are they using it for, are they using it to pay for anti-gun candidates and stuff? Well, no. They claim they use it to pay for their 56 staffers that they've got. So I want to say they can produce the books to say, oh, yeah, no, this money goes to pay for our staff. The other money that we use to bolster up anti-gun candidates and stuff, that comes from George Soros. So, no, that's a different pot. We use that different money. But still, I'd like to know why we have $1,200,000 going towards gun control. And you think that's it? No, not just the Brady campaign. Listen to this. Here's a partial list of groups. The Educational Fund to Stop Gun Violence out of Washington, D.C. They got $279,000. The Christians Against Gun Violence Endangering Our Children out of Garland, Texas, $85,000. Connecticut Against Gun Violence Fund, $59,000. New Yorkers Against Gun Violence, $57,000. Let's see, Women Against Gun Violence based in Los Angeles, $14,000. North Carolinians Against Gun Violence out of Raleigh, $13,000. I guess all you got to do is come up with a group and you can get some money. Man, what a country. This is a great country, isn't it? But you want to know what's interesting? Even though the vast majority of Americans do not support these groups and their anti-gun rights efforts, they still get taxpayer money to help keep them afloat. And by the way, you should know this. None of the country's major pro-gun organizations have applied for or received PPP funds. Not the NRA, not Gun Owners of America, and not the Second Amendment Foundation. Interesting, huh? Yeah, I'm sure they would have, if they would have, if, can you imagine if the NRA had applied for a payment protection program or payroll protection program grant? Oh my God, that would have gone nuts, right? People would have gone absolutely nuts that tax dollars were going to support the NRA or Gun Owners of America. But not so much with all these other little shenanigan groups like Rhode Island Gun Violence Education Fund out of Kingstown, Rhode Island, $5,248. Now, what did they need that for? or the States United to Prevent Gun Violence based in Chicago, $6,800. Well, I would say they're not doing a very good job given the 40 to 50 people each weekend that are getting shot in Chicago, and they receive $6,800. I'd want my money back, I would say. Here's an interesting story that we all have to remember if you are carrying a firearm out there. There's some other stories I didn't pull up this, copy down to be able to talk to you about. There was one where a woman did a post. She was absolutely incensed because there was a guy in a grocery store and he was open carrying a gun. How do I know if he's deranged or not? Or maybe he had a bad day. I've got to go shop somewhere else. Huh. Okay. So I didn't copy that one. There's actually a little meme, or not a meme, but an actual post that shows a picture the woman took with her cell phone of the guy. And he's just a normal guy. I think he's picking out a quart of milk or something like that. And he's got a gun in a holster on his waist. Now, I got to say, I always pause when I see somebody open carrying because I give the guy the once over and make up my own mind about what I think about the way he's carrying or what equipment he's got and things like that. But if it's the law, it's the law. Okay. So here we have a case in Phoenix where a guy was concealed carrying and he was a good guy with a gun, was mistakenly shot and killed by a Phoenix police officer. Now, the thing to remember, this is very important. And I'll read this to you verbatim so you can see what it said. A recent officer-involved shooting in Phoenix represents a host of lessons that we can all learn from. A responding officer there mistakenly shot a good guy with a gun as he held a pair of shoplifters at gunpoint. Both parties made mistakes, but Williams Brookins, 39, paid for the well-meaning Good Samaritanism with his life. Brookins, the good guy, apparently observed a pair of shoplifters fleeing a store. Riding passenger in an SUV, he had the driver pursue the pair to a nearby parking lot where he confronted them at gunpoint. Okay, how many mistakes did this guy make? Okay, think about this a second. First of all, and a Phoenix cop nearby heard the commotion and responded. The radio transmissions indicated that the cop assumed that Brookins, now by the way, this is interesting here, Brookins, who was the concealed carry person, who is black, was the armed robber, and the two white shoplifters were the victims in the armed robbery attempt. The police officer shouted for Brookins to drop the pistol, and an instant later opened fire. Brookins went down, and after almost a week in the hospital, he died of his wounds. Okay, so here's the thing that you have to remember if you are carrying concealed or carrying openly, is that you are not a law enforcement officer. Okay, and by the way, that same thing can happen too. There was a story that was accompanying this where, an undercover officer was shot, and actually another one where an undercover officer, he dropped his gun and identified himself, and the crooks got away, okay, because the officer assumed, by the way, it was a bank robber who was dressed in a suit, and the undercover officer was dressed in jeans and a T-shirt. So he had assumed that the guy in the suit was the good guy and that the guy in the T-shirt and the jeans was the bad guy. And he held him at gunpoint and the other guy ran away. And then the FBI, the law enforcement officer, he identified himself and I'm sure they didn't have a good laugh over it. But the point is that in this case here, the officer misidentified the good Samaritan, the concealed weapons holder, as the bad guy, and the other two people as good guys. I don't even remember here to see. I don't know if they actually caught the guys later on, but the point is the two shoplifters. But the point is So what are a couple of the mistakes the person made? Well, first of all, you're not law enforcement. So even if you were standing right there by the store, you should not be drawing a firearm and trying to hold the guy, you know, under gunpoint. Secondly, he had the guy, he was a passenger in an SUV. He had a guy pursue them into a parking lot where he confronted them. Okay. So now you're totally removed from the situation and, you know, it's not apparent what's going on to the law enforcement officer when he showed up. So he didn't have any idea who was the good guy and the bad guy. And the guy with the gun, he assumed was the bad guy. Thirdly, you are not allowed to pull your firearm in, you know, in that kind of role. You are only supposed to, you know, a legally armed citizen doesn't look or function, doesn't have a badge. You're not a cop. You're not even a junior policeman, okay? You know, that's where these people that carry these, concealed carry badge. It is a very bad idea. They sell them where people can put them on their belt and it says concealed carry holder or whatever. What a stupid idea is that? Okay, I would say that's impersonating an officer in the first place. But in the second place, you are now identifying yourself as a target, essentially. But the real point is that you are only able to use deadly force in the event of imminent death or grave bodily harm or sexual penetration, okay? You are not allowed to stop somebody because they're a shoplifter. Even security guards at the stores don't do that. Matter of fact, there was an article about Walgreens or something in Atlanta this week where the people down there they're closing, like 15 Walgreens have closed this year because they have a law that says if you are stealing less than $950 worth of something, they're not even going to charge you. So these guys come in with a shopping cart, load it up, and head out. As long as it's under $950, then they're not even worried about it. And the security officers are not stopping them, okay? And so you're going to stop them as a bystander? Absolutely not, okay? You cannot do that. You can protect yourself, a loved one, or even a stranger in the case of imminent bodily harm, gross bodily harm, death, or sexual assault. That's it. Okay? So don't try to be a hero because you know what? When those officers show up and you're standing there holding two people on the ground with their bag of Oreos that they stole from the grocery store, you might get yourself shot like this, like Mr. Brookins did down in Phoenix. Okay. And I have a lot of respect for the Phoenix police officers. So let's see. Senate's latest attempt at gun control deal falls apart. This is the Democrat, Chris Murphy, who is the lead Democrat for gun control. And he said, we've been trying to work on this, but we can't get any meaningful compromise from the GOP. Well, you know what happens is that the compromise in terms of what they expect from the GOP or the conservatives on gun control is that we actually give in to them and they actually, like, they'll go out and they will want to ban everything. You know, anything over five rounds in a mag and semi-automatic gun and all this kind of stuff. And then when they come back and what they expect us to give up things, but all they give up is something that they weren't, they like overachieve in what they're trying to ask for. And then they give up something that they knew they couldn't give up anyway. And they call that compromise. But for us, we got to give up our rights. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600 and 92.7 FM. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back. And we have got Ed from Ypsilanti on the phone with a comment about Texas gun laws. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Dick. Happy Saturday. Oh, I'm sorry. Happy Saturday. Juneteenth. Happy George Floyd Day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, look, you're aware of Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about
and,
Texas?
Basically, they went to constitutional carry?
Let's see. They were, yes. Abbott was going to sign it. Are we all signed now?
Yep, he signed it. One thing I'm trying to find out, I've been very interested in this part of it. One of the bills was that if it was a Texas-made suppressor, that they would not enforce you getting a stamp to run it as long as you run it in Texas, which makes sense, which reminded me of the Wyoming gun law that said, hey, if you build a gun in Wyoming, then federal law doesn't apply to it as long as it doesn't leave Wyoming.
Yeah,
and when I looked at
that,
I found there were seven other states that have enacted laws like that.
Actually, my next story I was just going to get to is about Missouri, but I had heard that about the Texas suppressor issue, but I did not read any stories on it this week yet. So I'll probably talk about that next week then. But I did hear that, and I have heard that before with, I think it was like Montana and Wyoming and some of these other ones that said, hey, if it's made in Montana and bought by a Montana person and stays in Montana, then federal law doesn't apply.
Yeah. I think you mentioned Missouri. Missouri's one of them. And, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get ahead of you.
No. It's a good story. I just did not, because I did enough. I've got some politics here, and then I was going to talk about M1 Garands a little bit later here. But pick all my stories. So,
okay. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, Ed. No, Ed's always on top of it. And in his show, which is on at 1 o'clock, he'll pick up probably a lot of this stuff too, because Ed's a big Second Amendment supporter as well. And I enjoyed his new promo now, where he talks about if you're cleaning guns or hand loading ammunition, which is what I'm frequently doing when I'm listening to Wham. So at any rate, I enjoyed that. Thanks, Ed, for the call. So I was just going to talk about Missouri, and Missouri has gotten into can I say pissing match on TV or on the radio? Okay, Derek says yes. He's going yes. So Missouri has gotten into a pissing match with the DOJ. So they came out and said that they were going to be a sanctuary state, and that they were not going to enforce any unconstitutional gun laws. Okay, well, the DOJ came back and said, you can't do that because that then you're usurping our authority, blah, 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 blah. And then then Missouri came back and said, oh, yeah, well, we can do that because a couple of reasons. By the way, the whole surrogate, what is it called? I just had a senior moment here. They had called it the Second Amendment Preservation Act. But any of these sanctuary laws and stuff are interesting because the DOJ does observe that states are sanctuary cities for immigration. Oh, well, wait a minute. And you know what happened? President Trump said, hey, the DOJ, we're not going to give any money to any states that are sanctuary cities for immigration. And so one of the first things that the Biden administration did was rescind that law so that, California and all these states that want to be sanctuary laws for immigration. And by the way, sanctuary states for cannabis laws and stuff like that. Oh, well, apparently that's okay. but the DOJ says you cannot be a sanctuary state if you want to do it for the Second Amendment. So we're going to see where this goes. They wrote back and they said, Missouri is not attempting to nullify federal law. Instead, Missouri is defending its people from federal government overreach by prohibiting state and local law enforcement agencies from being used by the federal government to infringe Missourians' right to keep and bear arms. Ha, 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 ha. So that's what they said. And so now we're waiting for the DOJ to come back. They said, by the way, you guys should just look after your own things like immigration issues and cannabis laws if you're going to be dabbling in the state's business. So very interesting. Let's see. Mother Jones, the gun control crowd is giving up nothing. The gun control crowd is saying, oh, well, we've made compromises. This is back to that compromise discussion where their idea of compromise is we give up our Second Amendment rights and they give up their ridiculous overreaches, okay? So I want to say it's pretty interesting when you read, they will typically go after a ton of stuff. And by the way, this is kind of interesting that since the 2012 the massacre at Sandy Hook Elementary School, the Senate has actually not done anything meaningful in the way of gun control. So actually, they've gone 9 years now without being able to accomplish anything. And so they go out and they talk about they want to, ban all assault weapons and all high capacity mags and stuff like that. But then they'll settle for something else and they call that their compromise. Okay. Well, I think our position should be we want all, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So we want all laws dropped. Oh, okay. Well, then our compromise will be we'll keep a NICS check. Okay. So now we've compromised. Now, where are they going to go? So it's kind of interesting that way. Let's see. Another story. I'm going to save this one for next week. It was about basic gun store etiquette. Okay. And by the way, don't pull your firearm out in a gun store. You might get met with an unwanted response, okay? So let's see. Well, I'll talk about that and some other things next week. But the M1 Garand, I was starting to talk about that and last week, and just in terms of it being compared to an AR-15 being a beautiful rifle, it's got wood and leather and stuff. And AR-15 have? It's got black plastic and black aluminum and black. I mean, it's kind of boring. And yeah, I get it that the Garand is a nice piece of machinery. And so I got a call this week from a friend. And I don't know if he's going to be able to call in or not. And we were talking about M1 Garands. And he goes, oh, are you going to talk about those this next week? And I said, yeah. And he said he was out trying to do some setting up his gun and zeroing it in and stuff. And he really got into the how you set up and zero the targets on an M1 or an M14, or the sights on an M1 or an M14. And it is down to a science, okay? Because actually what you do is and I want to say the M1 Garand has a really neat kind of not a typical ramp sight or whatever. It's got kind of you rotate a knob and it's got a cogged, curved shaped piece of metal that brings the sight up. And there's a couple different kinds of sights. There's a regular peep sight, but there's also a national match sight, which is a hooded sight that actually is set up different. But what happens is you start out with the sights at it depends on what you're sighting it at, what distance and stuff, but you actually set it up so that you have 8 clicks of that rotation of that knob. You know, click, 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 click. Each one of those clicks is a minute of angle. Now, I want to say this is not like, not unlike when people are using a military site that has mil dot holdover points and stuff like that. A lot of people don't really know how those are set up. Well, on a Garand, what happens is that each click is 1 minute of angle. Okay. And what happens is 8 clicks up from the bottom is 100 yards. So you actually regulate it for the front sight. You adjust the front sight and stuff so that, and on a peep sight, you know, it's like a circle and you're seeing the front sight and your eye will naturally center that front sight. And you adjust it so that at 8 clicks up that the, that it is correct. And then it is, if you go with it, let's see, another click up, that's another inch, that's 200 yards, okay? So let's say you come down a click, I'm sorry, you come down a click for 200 yards because it's still traveling up at that point. So there is a really neat procedure for setting those up. And that's where these guys get these Garands where they can shoot, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 yards out there. And they're just able to go click, 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 click. And each one is a minute of angle. And they know that that's how they're regulated. It is a very neat thing. Now, there is actually, it's interesting where they say, if you have it set on the 100-yard position, 8 clicks up, a quick and dirty battle zero may be obtained by zeroing 1.5 inches up from the point of aim. So what you do is you actually, and this is interesting because it's a military firearm. So what you're aiming at is a man-sized target, okay? But if you come up 1.25 inches from the point of aim, and use that, it will allow you to hit a man-sized target anywhere from 100 or 0 to 400 yards. So I want to say it's interesting how when we are out there zeroing our sights in and our scopes in and things like that, we're thinking of okay, at 100 yards or at 50 yards or 200 yards, and that's what we're zeroing it for. But if you are using something like a military rifle that is an infantry rifle that was used at long distances and stuff, you have to be able to understand where that aim is going to be and what that trajectory is going to be anywhere from, you know, 10 feet away to 400 yards away. So it's interesting that there's a very neat procedure, a formal process of setting up the Garand site. So I just found that interesting. Also, if you have the national match sites, the difference too is that the clicks on a national match site are 0.5 minute of angle. And what's a minute of angle? Well, a minute of angle is 1 inch movement of the bullet where it hits the target at 100 yards. And so a 0.5 minute of angle or one click on a national match hooded aperture sight, that's only 0.5 inch at 100 yards. So you got to know what kind of sight you have on. And then what you can do is there's actually a little shroud that you can loosen up the screw and you can turn it. And so you can have it at, so 1 is 100 yards, 2 is, you know, another click is 200 yards. That way you can read the numbers and you'll be able to quickly move back and forth. Kind of neat. It's kind of like some of the more modern sights now have turrets on them that you can adjust the turret to set it for 100 yards, 200 yards, or anything you want in between. So let's talk a bit about, oh, you know what else is interesting with the Garand is you can find any number of articles out there about, quote, the Garand ping. Do you guys know what the Garand Ping is? Okay. Well, I know that everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, every old timer who's listening to this on the radio this morning knows what Garand Ping is, because it has a N block clip. It's a steel clip. Yes, not a magazine. It's a steel clip that holds 8 rounds. Okay. And that rounds, you actually, the bolt locks back, you put the, push it down into, and then one of two things, you can either go all the way and it'll go forward itself, or you can push it in and then knock the bolt forward and it will chamber around. But the thing is that is a separate metal encasement for those 8 rounds. And after you shoot, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on the 8th round, it ejects that. And that steel, spring steel end block clip goes ping. So it's funny because there's a lot of myths around that. They said, oh, that's a bad thing, because in the middle of the battle, if the bad guy hears that ping, he knows you're unloaded. Okay. And then he can charge and you'll be, you know, he knows you're out of ammo. Well, I got to say, first of all, in the heat of the battle, you're probably not going to be able to hear that ping, okay? Secondly, what if you're with your whole squad of guys, okay? Not everybody's pinging at the same time, so it's kind of a myth. But by the way, on YouTube and on Google and everything, there is a whole ton of videos and composite videos and stuff of just guys shooting and then their Garands pinging. I'm going, man, somebody has got too much time on their hands if they can make a video of Garand pings. We got Joe from Tecumseh on the phone with a comment about sights. Hi, Joe. How are you?
Morning, Dick, for what's left of it. It's getting a little complicated on sighting in the service rifle, the O3As, M1, yeah. M1As, or M14s. Basically, the rear sight, the aperture where the sight for the M1 and the M14, M1A has coarse 1-minute serrations into the receiver. That's a manufacturing process.
Right.
And then the left side windage, it's normally 8 to 10. It depends on the individual. But anyway, once you get that initial down to zero, mechanical zero, and then back it up mechanically 8 to 10. You just set that. And then you have to file down the front sight to get a 200-yard zero. Everything is dependent on 200 yards now.
Okay.
So when you get your group all centered at 200 yard on the target, then you have to, there's a, on the left-hand index elevation knob, there's a screw slot there that you lightly hold the OD of the knob, unscrew that, come up to where you can locate the zero on the reference line, which faces the shooter. And then you go 8 to 10 clicks further forward, you know, push the thumb towards the front sight.
Okay.
Stop. And you get the clicks. Set that straight. And then that gives you a zero mark at 200.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned,
I think that's what I was trying to say, but it must not have come across that way.
A little garbled, let's leave it at that.
I'm sorry,
anyway,
go ahead.
And then there are two different national match sites available. One is the hooded aperture, has a little offset. The aperture in that hood is offset by whatever the half minute is. And it's always kept at there's a little notch on that hood that always stays at 6 o'clock position. If you want to raise it up, you just rotate it to 12 o'clock. And then you're still using the national or the standard M1 minute of angle serrations on the left side index.
Okay.
Some people they want to use the old battle site because it offers them a clearer sight picture. There is a additional insert that is made with, it's a steel washer. It's gradated with the 1-inch minutes on the one side to fit the receiver, and then the other side is finer for the half minutes.
Okay.
And ideally, the same thing, get your zero, get the front sight sighted in, and that's it. Even if you have to do a windage adjustment, it's like 6 thousandths adjustment side to side of the front sight to move you 1 minute left or right.
1 minute at 100 yards, right? One inch at 100 yards.
It's all at 200. I got an old M72 sight and target that says at 50 yards, sight here, and then adjust up, and that gives you your 2, 3, 6, and 500 and 600 yard if you have to do it at a shorter range.
Sounds like you've done this a few times.
I shoot the M1 rifle over the course at Perry.
So you, and I don't even know, are they still doing high power down there now, or did they stop? Have they started it back up from COVID restrictions?
I believe they are. They're supposed to be, I believe, next week. You have to go onto the cmp.org website. I think they have a scheduled match for next week. I mean, it should be on because apparently Governor DeWine has abated all COVID restrictions. So we should be on. Saturday should be a 800-point match, which is 880 rounds of ammo for shooting. Actually bring 100, 120 in case you have to refire some various stages. And then on Sunday, there'll be an EIC match, which is Excellence in Combat or competition match for people with the service rifles, M1 Grands, M1As, M14s, canned. Fire for getting the points for a leg match for you, getting distinguished marksmanship badge.
Cool.
Distinguished shooter. You have to go on the CMP website to get further information.
You know, CMP is one of the places that still, you know, well, they still have the civilian marksmanship program where they will still sell you Garands as they still have them, actually. Not all the grades they've got. I've actually got a thing on here about it today. We're going to run out of time. I'm not going to be able to talk about it a whole lot more today. But the CMP has proliferated the M1s and M14s when everybody else seems to have switched over to ARs and stuff.
Well, in the 80s, the M16s by the military teams were coming in, but still a lot of the like Marine Corps reserve team, they were all using 14s at that time.
Well, hey, Joe, thank you for calling. And I thought I was trying to, you know, I realized very quickly when I got into the explanation that I was getting like probably overly technical. But you clarified it for us, and I appreciate you calling and listening today. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, Dick. Have a good day.
Good
weekend, everyone.
I'll tell you what, we will talk more about this next week because I think that that's just one of the guns that it was a gun of our youth that we remember from all the television shows and the war movies and things like that. And I have one, and I love it. So we'll talk more about it next week because I like talking about guns I love. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio. I'll see you next week.